Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Ben Bernanke gave a press conference today explaining what the Fed is doing and why. Economics, he said, is hard.
But we are determined to be as clear as we can, and we hope that you and your listeners and the markets will all be able to follow what we're saying.
It's almost like he was talking just to us, wasn't it? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
This podcast is supported by Netflix Instant Streaming. Thousands of TV episodes and movies on your computer or mobile device instantly streamed by Netflix to save you time, money, and hassle. Free 30-day trial now at netflix.com/APM.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. This is the Marketplace Podcast for Wednesday, the 19th day of June. Good to have you with us. And you know how every time Ben Bernanke speaks, people tie themselves in knots trying to figure out what he's actually saying, what he means? Clearly, the Fed has gotten sick and tired of that, so they put this line in the remarks that Mr. Bernanke gave after the meeting wrapped up today. Remember, the debate here is all about tightening or tapering, as we were talking about yesterday, exactly how the Fed is going to stop buying bonds and stop pumping money into the economy. Here's Bernanke.
To use the analogy of driving an automobile, any slowing in the pace of purchases will be akin to letting up a bit on the gas pedal as the car picks up speed, not to beginning to apply the brakes.
In other words, taper, not tighten. He did say that could start as soon as later this year, depending on where the unemployment rate is. But come on, how do you not love Ben Bernanke and car analogies, right? Anyway, he had nice things to say about the housing market today as well, how it's leading the recovery and all that. But back in the dark days of the crash, things weren't quite so nice. People were getting mortgages they never should have. And companies that were accused of shady dealings would be investigated by the Securities and Exchange Commission. Punishment was usually a fine without any admission of wrongdoing, and that was it. They were called no-admit, no-deny settlements. Not outside Wall Street, all that popular, as you might imagine. Now, though, the new head of the SEC, Mary Jo White, says she is going to seek confessions in some cases. But just what does a mea culpa really get you anyway? Marketplace's Stacey Vanek Smith reports.
Saying you're wrong might be the right thing to do. Noble, even. But for a company, admitting wrongdoing conjures up a very scary Latin phrase.
Collateral estoppel. Once you've been found liable in one case, you cannot deny it in the next.
Donald Langworth is a professor of law at Georgetown University. He says collateral estoppel means admitting guilt comes with the promise of more lawsuits.
Anybody who considers themselves a victim, whether it be a shareholder, a competitor, a state regulator, can say, you know, it's not a question whether you did anything wrong anymore. It's what do you owe us?
That means it's cheaper for most companies to go to court, says Joe Grundfest, a professor of law and business at Stanford. That's bad news for the SEC. It's got limited resources and can't afford to fight huge companies in court.
If the SEC wants to settle these matters quickly and get money back to investors quickly, it often has to agree to settle on a neither admit nor deny basis.
Still, the threat of having to admit guilt is important, says corporate governance expert John Coffey. He says companies should not be able to count on a slap on the wrist fine when they break the law. Coffey says the SEC may simply have to reshuffle resources.
We may have less SEC actions, but the settlements will be more meaningful, and I think that's the right direction to move in.
Coffey expects we'll still see a lot of no-admit, no-deny settlements from the SEC. In New York, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
I don't know. Maybe if Bernanke had said he's sorry, traders would have reacted better. As it was, they did not care at all for that Fed news today. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Okay, so holy cow, but did you see that basketball game last night? Miami, with its back against the wall, beat San Antonio in overtime to stay alive. Game 7 of the NBA Finals, which seriously could be a little anticlimactic, is Thursday night, after which there will probably be endorsement opportunities galore for the winners. Pro basketball players, after all, have sold a lot of things. Cars, sports drinks, bubble gum. How about Obamacare? There is talk of the White House partnering with the NBA to get the word out to the uninsured, as Marketplace's Scott Tong reports now from Washington.
athletes hawking insurance? It's been done. Massachusetts paid the Boston Red Sox to promote its health exchanges a few years back. Knuckleballer Tim Wakefield threw this pitch on TV.
The state's health connector has affordable plans, lots to choose from, and easy sign-up. And in Massachusetts, even if you lose your job, you can still get coverage.
Last week at a state health meeting, officials indicated the feds will follow suit, citing a national campaign sponsored by the NBA. Josh Archambault of the Massachusetts think tank Pioneer Institute attended. He said the target group is
young single males. And the demographics of the NBA certainly match that. And probably most importantly, their season also coincides with open enrollment for the Affordable Care Act.
The NBA didn't call us back to confirm. Federal health officials said they're speaking with a wide range of potential partners. What is clear is the president loves basketball. He hooped it up with some NBA stars in D.C. 3 years ago. Former White House economist Jared Bernstein was there with the pros.
They were probably playing at around 5%, and he was playing at around 100%. But, you know, that said, he scored a few baskets, as I recall.
An NBA assist would be great for the White House. But what about the league? It has to be careful not to appear political, says brand consultant Jamie Rice at Carton Donofrio Partners.
If they're there saying, hey, there's this new thing out there, you need to check it out, find out if it's for you, that's one deal. If they're out there saying the president has done X, Y, and Z and we need to support him, that's a completely different deal.
Whatever the outreach, it will be hard convincing young single men to buy insurance. But Obamacare needs them paying into the system to succeed. In Washington, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
The fashion retailer H&M announced today it's going to start online sales here in the United States this summer. And that sounds, I know, a whole lot like a headline from 15 years ago, doesn't it? Marketplace's Adrian Hill explains what's up.
Yeah, this is a story where analysts have plenty to say. But a story full of analysts? Boring. So instead, I called up the perfect potential H&M online shopper, 24-year-old Sonia Laws in Asheville, North Carolina.
I'm not excited enough to squeal, but I am excited.
Michael Pardo outside an H&M in Pasadena, California, was also amped.
It's about time. I was waiting for it since day one, since they opened up the store.
Thank you, Michael, for saying what all of us were thinking. Why did it take H&M so long? And this is where the analysts come in handy.
You've got complexities in the U.S. in terms of different sales taxes, where you put your distribution centers, how you manage even more sales than you had been planning on with just your individual stores.
Patty Edwards is with Trutina Financial. She says H&M can't afford to get it wrong. When you come this late to the party, you've got to look good.
They've got to be able to offer a turnkey experience that is an excellent experience right off the bat.
If H&M is able to get it right, Morningstar analyst Jamie Katz says other inexpensive online fast fashion is going to need to watch out.
H&M is very price cognizant. They do not like raising prices, and so that means it keeps other retailers on their toes regarding pricing.
So maybe cheaper summer dresses for us, huh?
Hopefully.
I'm Adrienne Hill for Marketplace.
More than 30 million people in this country work from home, at least part-time. That number is growing, in part because of the perceived benefits, among which are that home office workers get to spend more time with their families. That's true, to some degree, but when push comes to shove and your project is due and the boss is on the other end of the phone, they really have to get creative about getting some space. Alex Schmidt has that story.
Okay.
It's a Friday afternoon in Los Angeles. Perfect. Author and screenwriter Jessica Cousette-Edding is sitting in her home office, emailing with her publishing company about her new young adult novel. It's an unusually quiet moment. Edding has two sons, ages 3 and 1. Right now, they're on a walk with the babysitter.
I kind of know they're about to walk in, so I'm trying to do a few things that are a little bit less concentration heavy because I know I'm going to be jolted in a few minutes.
Edding's office is in a nook in her bedroom. She has a bathroom in here, and she stocks a full supply of water, coffee, and snacks.
Because if I am thirsty and I have to leave my office for a glass of water in the kitchen, that could inevitably mean I run into the kids and the nanny, and then it's mommy sit with me for lunch.
No sooner does she focus on her task when...
Mommy?
Yes?
Mommy, come.
Okay, can I have a second? I need to get one.
But all this hiding and dealing with interruptions can take its toll. Edding plans to build a more detached office. She says it could cost upwards of $25,000. It's enough to make you doubt the joys of spending the day in PJs.
Working from home can be wonderful. It often isn't because people don't think through well enough what they need to do to make it work.
Stu Friedman directs the University of Pennsylvania's Work-Life Integration Project. He says people switch back and forth frequently between work role and family role when they have a home office. That can be confusing for younger kids or even a spouse, so signals are key. It may seem simple, but Friedman's solution is to put signs on the door.
Red means do not enter. Mommy is in, you know, doing something that cannot be disturbed. Yellow means you can knock. And green means you can come on in.
More and more people are dealing with the challenges of living and working at home. Friedman thinks that houses of the future may be built to suit both uses. For now, there's a niche industry altering the houses of yesterday.
Today, we'll be extending this floating wall system once we've torn out the old drywall.
John Granahan's construction company specializes in high-end soundproofing. He's putting in several layers of insulating materials above the ceiling in the office of this Laguna Beach condo. Companies like his have seen an increase in demand for soundproofing home offices, 50% between last year and the year before.
I am very blessed to have found something so rewarding. You know, people tell me I've changed their lives. I have a sign that I like to hang out, love your neighbor again.
That includes the little neighbor who lives in the bunk bed down the hall. In Los Angeles, I'm Alex Schmidt for Marketplace.
Coming up.
The faster we do it, the faster, I mean, you can avoid so much confrontation.
When doing your job means making more enemies than friends. But first, let's do the numbers. Yes, yeah, so this happened. The Dow Industrial's off 1.3% today, 206 points after that Fed meeting, closed at 15,112. The NASDAQ back down 1.1%, that's 38 points, finished at 3443. The S&P 500 gave back 1.3%, 22 points, 1628. Citigroup down 1%. J.P. Morgan Chase also reversed 1%. Morgan Stanley erased 0.7%. Not all red ink, though. FedEx delivered a gain of 1% after reporting higher-than-expected quarterly profits. Dish Network picked up 0.4% after saying it's not going to make a new bid for Sprint Nextel. Sprint, however, lost more than 4% on that news. Bond prices, here's the news of the day. Bond prices fell. The yield on the 10-year T-note rose to 2.33%. You're listening to Marketplace.
This podcast is supported by Netflix Instant Streaming. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your computer, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly. Streamed now by Netflix, a great value. Netflix Streaming has lots of movie and television options, including past seasons of House of Cards, Breaking Bad, and Arrested Development. Watch them using Netflix Instant Streaming and find thousands of other TV series and movies during your free 30-day trial at netflix.com/APM.
From the Marketplace Statebook, here's a look at events coming up Thursday. In Washington, the Senate Armed Services Committee is scheduled to discuss the National Security Agency's electronic surveillance programs. The National Association of Realtors reports on sales of existing homes for May. And did you procrastinate on your spring cleaning? Time's up. Depending on what time zone you're in, summer begins late tomorrow night or Friday morning. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Kai Rizdal. So let's say you go out for dinner. The food's good. The service quite nice. The bill comes, and then you have to do some mental gymnastics to figure out what 18% of the tab is so you can leave a decent tip. Unless you're eating at Sushi Yasuda in New York City. The staff there doesn't get tipped because they make a living wage with benefits and because That's the way they do it in Japan. Scott Rosenberg is the co-owner of Sushi Yasuda. Scott, welcome to the program.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
I must say this is an intriguing idea, but I am left to wonder how two groups of people feel about it. One is your staff and the other are the customers. What kind of feedback do you get?
Over the course of the first week or so, I quietly observed the customers and the diners to see how they responded. Mm-hmm. And at first, they were just initially perplexed. There was no tip line on the credit card
slip. Yeah, right, because you expect that, and when it's not there, something's wrong. And
I think, you know, it helps that we're a classical, pure sushi restaurant, mm-hmm. and people kind of are a little bit more open to suspend their own habits or traditions a little bit.
Obviously, you raise prices to accommodate the fact that you are paying your staff more, and that completely makes sense. But I wonder if anybody has ever said to you, man, I could order like 20% more sushi now and feel good about it.
At the sushi bar, I saw three gentlemen when they read the little notice and they looked at each other and one said, you know what? I'm going to order 20% more sushi next time.
There you go.
And another one said, you know what? I'm going to come once more a month. Even though their final bill was, you know, the total was what they're accustomed to seeing, perhaps, they still had the reflex that they're getting an opportunity to dine more frequently. They saw it as kind of a plus.
Have your peers in the sushi circles of New York come to you and say, hey, Scott, man, what are you doing? You're killing us.
No. I think that there has been some attention on this. And I think other folks are sort of find it odd in the U.S. anyway. And, you know, other folks who've come in and said, you know what, this really makes sense. It's kind of makes sense all the way around. We're intrigued by the idea. So I don't think it's has a competitive mm-hmm. effect. I think it just kind of, it definitely works for us. And our diners are a little bit more open to following traditions that aren't their own.
So if you could have one piece of sushi, one, what would it be?
You know, it's funny when I talk about sushi, and it's happening now. My mouth starts to salivate. I guess it's a reflex. And if I had to have one piece of sushi, I would probably have a sayori. And what I would say though is that I'd be happy. And there I go. You can hear my salivating.
It's really funny. Actually, it's a little gross, but it's really funny.
But I will add that, you know, it's not a competition. The whole purpose of it is to have fun and enjoy the meal, and that's what Sushi Yasuda is all about.
Scott Rosenberg. He is the co-founder and co-owner of a sushi restaurant in New York City called Sushi Yasuda. Scott, thanks a bunch.
Thanks for having me.
Some people like their workspace nice and warm. Others like it cold. Some prefer soft chairs, others hard. Some demand quiet, others like a little hubbub about them. There is, though, one universal office truth, the dismay brought on by a lack of kitchen utensils. Audrey Quinn investigates the case of the missing flatware.
At lunchtime at this media design firm, it's every person for themselves when it comes to silverware. Donna Meredith works here. The company's called Local Projects. And Meredith, she's desperate for a spoon.
Here I'm making some tea, and I need to stir it up, so I end up using a knife. Silverware has always been an issue at every office I've worked in.
Her coworker Miriam Lakes deals with the missing spoon problem another way.
So I tend to hoard one at my desk, and I have like this specific kind, like heavier weight spoons that I like to just keep around me, yeah.
And don't even get her started on the emails about missing mugs.
It's definitely like maybe every 2 weeks or so, have you seen my mug? And there'll sometimes be a photo of it or just a detailed description.
It's not that the design firm's employees are petty, but having to worry about your kitchen objects at work, it really bothers people. I talked to Allison Green about it. She's a management consultant and she runs the blog Ask a Manager. She says she hears a lot of grumbling about kitchenware.
I think it speaks to a larger trend of people feeling like a sort of care that used to be there toward them from their workplaces is increasingly going away.
The kind of care that used to have a face, people like receptionists and office managers.
In terms of the percentage of the labor force that works in office administrative support, it's been in decline over the past several decades.
That's Mike Konzel. He's an economic research fellow at the Roosevelt Institute. He says that since the recession hit, U.S. companies have cut about 1 million office support positions.
part of it is technology. It's much easier to, you know, run your calendar than it was maybe 30 years ago, or simple things like getting a flight or booking a car can be done, you know, over your phone.
But collecting stray silverware, so far that's beyond the realm of current technology.
There isn't that Roomba yet, so once that robot comes, maybe things will be different. But for now, you know, you're going to have a lot of people who are just kind of angry in the workplace.
Back at the design firm, Jenny Cutnow and Miriam Lake say missing silverware can be annoying, but it's not that big of a deal.
I think if it came down to whether we could buy a new typeface or buy new silverware, I would vote for the typeface.
We'd all just be eating with our hands.
Yeah.
In New York, I'm Audrey Quinn for Marketplace.
For years now, five to be slightly more accurate, since the crisis and the recession, people have generally been just happy to have a job, any job. But there are some jobs in this economy, in key parts of it, in fact, that don't get any love. Not the jobs and not the people in them.
Ooh, that's a red. Look at that. Ooh.
Traffic officer Jenny Day is good at what she does.
Look at that. You just zip it into this little handheld gizmo and boom.
That's it.
9 years on the job.
And that's it.
That's just crazy fast.
So
boom,
we try to
done.
Do it. The faster we do it, the faster, I mean, you can avoid so much confrontation.
Thousands of parking tickets, probably more.
Anybody ever call you meter maid?
Oh, yeah, every day.
You all right with that?
Yeah, that's fine.
How much time do you spend in this job just shaking your head going, man, people are just amazing?
Every 2 minutes. Yeah.
And yet you keep coming back.
Oh, yeah.
So we're at the corner of, where are we? Union and 6th in downtown L.A. So tell me what you do as you drive around. Are you looking for people with red flashing parking meters or parked in red zones?
You look for everything. You look for meters. You look for loading zones. You look for people in red, like the gentleman right here. You get behind him. You ask him to move. Most of the time they do.
And you're signaling to get out of the way. Oh, there he goes. Do you ever feel like sometimes, like you're, you know how people feel like they're going to the dentist? Do you ever feel like that sometimes? Like you're the dentist?
More like the Grim Reaper for some people. We're taking money out of their pocket, regardless of whether they're wrong. They, you know, we're still taking their money.
Well, you know,
that's the way they look at us.
Well, that's a really interesting point, right? I mean, you guys are a revenue source for the city of Los Angeles.
Correct. Revenue source, but we're also here more on the safety part of it. We also take care of stolen vehicles. We take care of all the abandoned work. We do all the traffic control.
Do you have quotas? Do you have a number you have to give out every day?
No, not at all.
Huh. So how are you guys evaluated on job performance then?
We have what we call monthlies, where every month you'll sit down with your sergeant. They'll explain to you this is what you've been doing, because everything counts.
All right, so what's the worst part of this job?
I think the redundancy of driving around and just being called the B word all day long, and that's pretty, I mean, but you get immune to it like everything else.
So you probably know the best place to get a cup of coffee or a good greasy spoon breakfast or like a burrito or something around here, right?
In this area, not really. I don't really eat where I sight.
You just got to.
Yeah.
I don't eat where I sight. Oh, man.
You don't really want to eat where you give people tickets. You might get E. coli or something.
Hmm. I get that.
Yeah, you want to stray away from here.
So what's the ugliest thing anybody ever said to you? I mean, have they gotten personally abusive and physical and all that?
They've pulled out a gun on me.
Really?
Yes. For trying to take their vehicle, for being parked over 72 hours.
And what'd you do?
LAPD was called.
Yeah.
The guy was caught. He was arrested.
He stood there with a gun on you while you called the cops?
Yeah.
Wow.
They came back and arrested him and took his car.
And took his car.
Yeah.
And his gun and, you know, all of that stuff. Man, that's crazy.
It actually did make me think twice, like, do I really want to be here? But it's not, I mean, that's not something that happens all the time. It's not something, it's just something that this guy had an issue. Either he was high or he really liked his car. I don't know. You know, he had sentimental feelings. I don't know.
Yeah.
I was back at work the next day like nothing happened.
Did you take the rest of the day off that day, though?
Actually, no, I didn't.
Should have.
Just put that on your time card. Almost got shot.
Almost. Need to change pants.
All in all, in just under an hour, we gave out 6 tickets, no guns drawn, even got a thank you from a guy as Officer Day handed him his citation. But then, on the way back to Marketplace headquarters, we saw that same truck still parked in a red zone.
See, he stayed there and he took his ticket.
Wow. So you give him another one?
No, I won't. But if another officer comes by and sees that there's no ticket on the vehicle, he'll give him another ticket.
Right.
So he should have really just stuck it under the windshield.
Yes. If you receive a citation, always leave it there.
That's today's Marketplace Helpful Tip.
Brought to you by Jenny Day.
There's a whole slew of jobs out there that are important. Meter readers and dentists come to mind, but those are also jobs the rest of us love to hate or dislike intensely. How about that? Tweet us your suggestions at Marketplace APM. You can get me at Kai Rizdahl. We'll pick the best, put them on the radio, and if you want to see what Jenny Day looks like, she was a pistol, man. We got pictures at marketplace.org.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism.
This final note today, which, depending on your point of view, is either this week's sign the apocalypse is upon us or another milepost in the inevitable march of science. The World Food Prize, a $250,000 award for, and I'm quoting here, improving the quality, quantity, and availability of food, and that I'm told is highly regarded in the appropriate circles, will be shared by the chief technology officer at Monsanto for his work in developing and improving genetically modified crops. Said the president of the World Food Prize Foundation today, I'm sure there will be some controversy about it. Yeah, I'd say so. All right, we're done. That's Marketplace from APM. Today, the Dow off 1.3%, 206 points. The NASDAQ backed off 1.1%, 38 points. The S&P 500 gave back 1.3%, 22 points. Blame, if you like, Ben Bernanke. Carlos Asensio, Ravi Karman, Chris Clark, Stephen Colon, Bill Lance, Jeff Peters, Charlton Thorpe, and Brandon Willard engineer the broadcast for us. I'm Kai Rizdahl. I know I don't sound like him, but I really am. We'll see you tomorrow. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.